This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Marshes look like lazy things, you know, long, tall grasses swaying in the wind, flat, still water on the surface. But actually, marshes have long to-do lists. They're very busy underneath. They filter water, shelter fish and birds, and they slow down storm surges, among other things. And they perform these tasks quite well if the conditions are right. If they're not, well, they just might pick up and move. Marshes that sit too high or too low will migrate. And with climate change promising warmer temperatures and higher seas, that could change the real estate market for these critical ecosystems. New research is providing some answers to what can push a particular marsh past the tipping point. Anna Braswell is a coastal wetland scientist who conducted the research at the Nicholas School of the Environment at Duke University. She's currently a postdoctoral research scientist at Earth Lab at the University of Colorado Boulder, and she joins me now. Anna, welcome.
Thanks so much. It's an honor to be here, Frank.
Pleasure to talk with you. Tell us a little bit more about why marshes are so important.
Yeah, first and foremost, they are an amazing habitat for our coastal fisheries and provide important nurseries to fish and other marine life. And I think the best way to describe this is just talking about a day in the field. So I've done a lot of field work at Masonboro Island, which is just off the coast of Wilmington. And you get up at dawn, you get out on the water, and there are dolphins and sharks and sea turtles and all sorts of crabs and birds. And it just really shows you how used that habitat is by both species that are important commercially for our fisheries, but also just the general coastal ecosystem there. So first and foremost, that's one of their most important functions. Secondly, they are an amazing carbon sink. And this is really important when we start to think about blue carbon, which is becoming more of a popular topic in science, because blue carbon are the ecosystems around the coastline, such as marshes and mangroves and seagrass beds that retain carbon. And
how does that work?
Yeah, the way that marshes do this is they are tidally flooded every day. So they have this incoming water, and it means that they have low oxygen levels, which is important for decomposition. So when a plant dies and goes into the soil, it means that the plant material breaks down slower. And when plant material breaks down, it releases CO2. So because it's slower, those marshes retain more of that carbon in the soil and are not releasing CO2 to the atmosphere, and they're sinking that carbon in the soil. So they're an important carbon sink in our ecosystems. And the third thing I just wanted to briefly touch on is that there's new studies out that have shown that that marshes can slow down or attenuate waves or coastal storm surge during hurricanes and storm events. And it's even being starting to use in some of the green infrastructure or nature-based ways to protect our coastlines. So they're really critical in thinking about a more broad approach to how we might protect our coastlines from the impacts of hurricanes or storm surge.
And those are the top three. They're also an important filtration system, are they not?
Yes, absolutely. They transform all sorts of nutrients, and they, because of their position, you know, they are neither they're neither terrestrial or they're neither land nor sea. They're in between. They filter a lot of nutrients coming from the land before it reaches the sea, and are important for transforming things like the products, byproducts of fertilizer as it goes from the land to the sea.
All right, so they're important. Tell us about the kind of research you were doing.
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention briefly here that this is work that I also did with Dr. Jim Heffernan, who's at Duke. So ultimately, we wanted to understand what drives coastal wetlands. How are they formed, and how will they survive into the future? So you did a great job setting that scene with salt marshes. They are a type of wetland that are found, as I said, between coast and land. They have a tidal influence. They're typically about waist high or hip high with grasses and reeds. They're very muddy and mucky. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had to dig my boots out of the mud. And when you're there, they look incredibly serene, right? You imagine fishes jumping and the lapping of water and the tiny clicking noises of tiny crabs. But there's a lot going on there. So plants are a really important part of these ecosystems. And in order for these ecosystems to survive, they must maintain their elevation relative to sea level in order for those plants to survive and not to drown. But that maintenance is driven by forces that may seem far away from this serene image. They can be affected by marine processes such as hurricanes, and they can also be affected from forces from the land, such as sediment delivery from rivers, as well as this internal stability that's provided by the wetland plants that stabilize the soil through their root systems and also enhance sediment deposition by slowing down the water in order for the sediment to drop out. So understanding these forces and how they operate is incredibly important to predict what they might look like in the future. So to get back to what we looked at, we were looking along the Atlantic and Gulf coasts of the United States and started to see two patterns emerge, one being fringing marshes. So these would be small strips of marsh that hug the shoreline. And a great example of that is what you might see, for example, along the mouth of the Neuse River past New Bern in North Carolina. The second pattern is extensive marshes. So these are what you might see along the coast of Georgia with very huge, extensive wetlands that go on for acres along the river mouth. So we really wanted to try to decide or figure out what drives these two patterns, and are they two types or forms of marshes that represent different points in a trajectory or have different forces that are driving them to those patterns. So that's really where we started with in order to gauge how we might expect those drivers to push marshes in the future.
Right, so what did you find? Because it does seem to me there are a lot of natural forces and a lot of dynamics. I mean, I would think that marshes are changing all the time given the dynamics that they're facing. What's coming in from the coast? What's coming down from the rivers? What's coming down from the clouds? And that we haven't even talked about humans yet, right?
No, we'll get there. Don't worry.
But so it seems to me like they're changing all the time anyway, but we don't want them to die and go away. And that's where perhaps humans may play a part in accelerating redirecting some of these processes. Let's keep it there. So what part do humans play, or could you figure out from your research what makes these things tick? How are they formed? That's what you're looking at.
Right.
You know, how humans have maybe changed some of those processes.
Right. So you're completely right. Over really large geological timescales, say like hundreds of thousands of years, marshes are pretty short-lived because, as I was explaining, they exist at a certain range of sea level rise rates because they need those plants to maintain the marsh. So they are short-lived in that respect, and they're historically impacted. So we have undervalued marshes as a society in our past. The best example is the idea of miasma, or like disease-carrying gases that came out of the marsh, and that if you went into the marsh, you might get diseases from this. So we've historically drained and ditched and filled marshes to change them into other types of ecosystems, and we've lost a lot of them that way. With the no net loss policy that's now in place, that has slowed, but we still see impacts. Certainly things like shoreline land use and development can have an impact on marshes. On top of that, we're starting to see things like in the Mississippi River Delta, where a broad range of impacts of humans are starting to really impact those marshes, and they're seeing rates of loss of up to a couple football fields a day. So that would be from things like the channelization and the levees that go along the Mississippi River, where the river is no longer connected to the marsh. And so when those flood events happen, it used to pour water with sediment in it onto the marsh, and they would maintain their elevation through that sediment delivery. But now that we have channelized the Mississippi and levied it, that process doesn't occur any longer. So we're seeing huge loss rates in places like that, as well as in new studies coming out of the Northeast that are showing that the high rates of sea level rise are starting to impact the marshes there, and they might not be able to keep up. So changes to both the riverine system through through dams or channelization of the river, and as well as along the shoreline where we have development and impacts directly to the marshes, are two of the main ways that we are impacting marshes now and probably into the future, I would expect.
So going forward, and I've only left you about a minute and a half for this one, but what do we do? Because it's always a kind of a dicey mix when humans decide to intervene and, you know, reverse some of these processes. You think about our forest policies in the early part of the 20th century, which we're now paying for, forest fires, et cetera, I'm thinking of. How do we, you know, sort of go in and perhaps mitigate and reverse some of this without undoing the whole process that nature has set up for us?
Yeah, I think that there are two great ways that we can start to think about this. The first is deciding to restore and protect places that have the conditions and the driving forces in place that would maintain that marsh. So our study really points to areas that could have the conditions that are suitable for a marsh to maintain itself there. So really picking out those places for restoration, I think, is a great idea. The second is that another thing that marshes want to do as sea level rise happens is migrate landward. So they want to move towards the shoreline. And in some places, that's going to be okay because there's forests there that will then convert into marsh. But in some places, there's not really, there's human communities or settlements there that don't allow that. So finding ways to both allow that migration to happen and for us to live with those marshes because they are such an important, valuable system to us and to buffering storms is really important into the future when thinking about how to maintain these systems.
Great stuff. Anna Braswell is a coastal wetland scientist doing postdoctoral research at Earth Lab at the University of Colorado Boulder. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Just ahead, we look at the history of Haytai, the neighborhood in Durham. Durham is celebrating its 150th anniversary, and we'll talk about all of that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.